Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Drew Mentock and Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, as well as Pete Sampson of The Athletic. And what the four of us have in common is we are all in attendance at Marcus Freeman's first practice of 2026 training camp with the Fighting Irish. And we're getting together in lieu of instant analysis for the first ever instantaneous podcast, guys. And we have quite a bit to hand. There was no, of course, no pads, no tackling. But we saw a lot, and at the risk of throwing hyperbole out right away, that was one of the more impressive first practices I have ever seen Notre Dame have in a early August training camp, first training camp. There's usually something wonky. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly looked like a veteran football team from the standpoint they knew what they were doing and where they were going. And that's, I mean, that's a really good start for day one, just to be organized. Yeah, I think that wow. Yeah. When you started to say, Tim, what a great first practice, I thought you were going to mention Jasper Scaife to begin with, because he might have been the one
that segment entirely dedicated to him today.
You're right. Okay. Well, then I'll steer away from that.
No, he was great. Go ahead on Jasper Scaife. Cause I was laughing when I was filling out my defensive report. I'm like, he is on defense. I could just lead with him, but no, he was tell the masses what Jasper Scaife was able to
do. Well, I mean, he was hitting bombs, and they sounded louder than everybody else's punts. I mean, he was hitting bombs, as simple as that.
My biggest note on that was Eric Schmidt's best kick was Scaife's worst kick. They were equivalent, and then everything else from Scaife was just better, and none of those were getting returned at the very least because there's so much hang time.
In the 17 times Notre Dame punts this season are going to be very exciting.
No kidding. It was only 25 last year. And that was because they only played 25 games.
Or 12 games.
12 games.
True. Yeah. All right. Well, you heard it here first. Notre Dame will punt more this year because it'll be playing more games. So Pete Sampson, one of your standouts, and I knew why, but I think you should tell the masses that follow you on Twitter and also Irish Illustrated subscribers. Kingston Viliamuasa was one of your standouts from practice.
Yeah, some of the standouts are just by showing up, and he would have been a guy that was a standout just by showing up because, you know, we're not that far removed from the ACL last November. But on top of that, there was a rep in, I don't know if it was 7-on-7 or 1-on-1s where it must've been 7-on-7. He was matched up with Jordan Faison, and Carr couldn't complete the pass to Faison. That's like, linebackers can't do that. So I wanted to talk to Ash afterwards, just like, what does Kingston Viliamuasa do that other linebackers cannot? Because I think he's sort of viewed as like, is this the best linebacker in the country? And like, frankly, he hasn't played a ton of football to get that mantle. Point.
Yeah.
But I think it might be reasonable, but I would love to hear more from Ash, and maybe we'll get this out of Freeman later in camp. Just like, what the heck does this guy do that's so different? Because it's like you watch him out there and it is different from everybody else.
Well, and I mean, Ash would probably give a much better answer, but mine would be he does everything. Like that is really what separates him. And I talked to a source too. And I mean, I think we're less than 9 months out from the ACL injury. And it's almost like he has mutant healing powers. Just the fact that he's out there without a brace or anything doing those type of things already is quite remarkable.
I want to transition to the offense because I don't know if you guys heard this or not, to Kingston Viliamuasa with CJ Carr, who has been known to be garrulous when he's on the football field. He completed a pass in front of Kingston, who did not get out to the flat. And all you heard was, King, you got to get out there, man. And it was not a coach. It was CJ Carr telling Kingston Viliamuasa he did not get out to somebody. So that is what you get when you're facing CJ Carr all day long in a Notre Dame practice field. Tim, you were able to watch both offense and defense. You saw more of Carr and Hebert than Grubbs and Gerard, because Notre Dame two spots, which for people means there's two fields going. We had the Carr Hebert, quote unquote, today's varsity.
And there are bleachers on that side of the field, and we're expected to stay there once that starts. Did watch Teddy Gerard throw the football. You know, he's got a very circular motion, arm swing, I should say, but he's really quick. I mean, he really gets rid of the football quickly. But again, he was down on the other field, and so we really couldn't watch those guys. So it was a two man game, and CJ Carr and Blake Hebert. I mean, Hebert had a really nice deep ball to Matt Jeffrey. Big day for Matt Jeffrey. You know, we're always talking about receivers, And we never mentioned Matt Jeffrey. And
we got in some trouble for highly rating Matt Jeffrey this summer on our message board, actually, telling us that we were idiots, as if we just decided this lacrosse player was going to be good and we hadn't talked to anybody before.
Yeah, well, he looked good today. And, you know, I mean, when I watch Blake Hebert, I don't know that there's any one asset that really jumps out. And so I come away from today thinking like everybody else that, man, you really got to keep CJ Carr healthy. I mean, they're going to make a lot of progress during the preseason, and probably Hebert more than anyone because he's been around longer. But there's just such a significant difference between, you know, 1 and 1A or 2B or whatever.
Here you had the offense today, and 8 wide receivers are basically, I'm using the word varsity field because that's what it is. I mean, it was the varsity field today. Some of the guys will go to the other field and switch out. I even asked Mike Denbrock about that. The guys battling today, the varsity field receiver might not be at the varsity field tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And I think something worth noting too is just on the first day, they're going to kind of have guys slot in a certain spot. I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, we won't get to see it, but if Hebert's on the other field at some point later in camp too, and they're moving people around. But yeah, you mentioned the 8 receivers. I mean, Faison was out there. Great House was out in the slot, which I think was encouraging to see from a hamstring standpoint. We haven't seen him get that kind of work in a long time. So I think, and he made some plays, not too concerning. That Mylan Graham, I think, is somebody who we saw play pretty much everywhere today. So I think he wasn't necessarily out there at first with the first team, but again, it's the first day, he's a transfer. That's the type of thing they're going to really want to see him earn. And Micah Gilbert at least made one play against Leonard Moore. It's hard to evaluate him, as we always say, but I think it's always good to, he caught a pass and a slant, which I think is maybe Leonard Moore's only slight potential weakness. So it's still good to see him making plays and competing.
You mentioned that Nolan James kind of caught your eye at running back. The very last rep, or the last real rep we saw, was probably his best one, but I don't know if you heard what Coach Sider said to him when he finished off what would have been about a 25-yard run, basically to paint the picture, and Pete can get more into James from what he saw. But James was patient, outside zone, waited, hit a crease, and hit 25, 30 yards, and I stopped looking because they stopped chasing at that point. And Sider said, that's why you do it that way. You just let those big boys do work.
Yeah,
it's underrated that Nolan James knows that's how you do it that way.
Yeah, I think he's just got like a natural ability there. And I mean, the play that stuck with me was actually a reception. And I think it was a bunch of comeback routes, and Carr was rolling to his right or looking to his right and didn't see anybody because it was all covered up. And James had, you know, kind of taken a wheel route down the left sideline. I don't know if it was actually a wheel route, but, you know, everyone's covered and it's kind of scramble drill. And James comes back and makes sort of a sliding 20-yard reception going out of bounds. And I was struck by this in the spring. I think it's still true now. They really trust James in the pass game at a higher level than maybe they should, just because he hasn't done it in a game. But clearly the staff likes what they see there. I thought Aeneas Williams was good today too. He seemed to run harder than I remember him running in practices before. Maybe just because he's the starter now and before he knew he wasn't. But there's a little bit of a violence to the way he plays, and I liked what I saw from him today too.
I think there's been a pattern with Nolan James in the passing game that I think we can go back to the spring, and there were instances where they really like to split him out and get him in space and get him a football. So we get such little access to practice sessions, and you don't want to overreact to the brief, you know, times you get a chance to see them practice. But again, today they were getting him the football in space, and so I would think that that's something you want to keep an eye on as we get into the season, what they do with Nolan James, you know, not only in the run game. Obviously he will spell or share the position with Aeneas Williams, but, and we know that Aeneas Williams certainly is capable of catching the football, but I think Nolan James is a guy they want to really accentuate in that area of his game.
Yeah, I think Aeneas Williams too. He had that one-handed catch all the way downfield today. He talked to Mike Denbrock about it. He said he's continually amazed by how much better Williams keeps getting in the passing game. I thought Williams was great today at the end. His patience when he sees a hole. He goes from, not zero, because he shouldn't be running at zero, he goes from 25 to 60 when he sees a hole and he fires through it. I just think we keep saying the difference there is Jeremiah Love goes 70 and he'll go a solid 35. But I like what they have in Aeneas Williams right now. Drew Bentock pointed out a few times that this wasn't a day for hitting, But it was good to see Kedron Young was varsity field and getting plenty of reps, even if he didn't get the ball much in 7-on-7. Otherwise, he was out there plenty.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little surprised to see him out there so much with the ones, but he was, I think, the second one in after Aeneas Williams came out early on. So he was out there. They did pass the ball to him too. Maybe not. It was more in like dump off situations and stuff like that. But I've definitely been somebody who's a little bit of a doubter of Kedron Young. So there's still a long way to go this fall camp, but he definitely had a pretty good day. And I totally agree on Aeneas Williams. I don't think there's no bad rep that jumped out to me for him. And you mentioned the Nolan James run. I feel like Aeneas Williams had several like that where he just demonstrated the patience and kind of showed a little bit of why he's more the 1A in advance in that game, because I think he just impressed all around today.
And Kedron Young was listed at 234, which is down. Wasn't he at 242 in the spring or the last time that we saw a weigh-in? So that's a better number for him. He's not... Yeah, you know, I mean, you get so accustomed to the quick twitch running backs of Notre Dame here recently. I don't think he's as quick twitch as that, but he's 234. He's a big back. He's a little bit of a different back. But it was really good to see him get, like I said, Drew, I mean, carries with the big boys. And, I think generally when they open camp, the upperclassmen or the older guys are going to get those first reps, and then you work from there.
I mean, I'm not saying Jaden Sanders, we're going to go to defense soon, but to your point, I'm not saying Jaden Sanders isn't ahead of DJ McKinney, but he was here for 9 months before DJ McKinney. So if anybody's like, well, he was there, well, of course he is. He should be. You're going to get that first start. And I think that usually trickles throughout the lineup. Not a lot of passes to the tight ends today, but Tim Priester, you and I saw a tight end in a lead role.
Well, you're talking about the personal protector?
The personal protector. That's a unique situation for a freshman tight end.
Yeah, and he's a little bit undersized compared to standing next to Jason Onye as a personal protector. But he was, as you mentioned in your review, he was calling out the pre-snap signals in a punt and doing it forcefully and aggressively. And so that was a good sign. You know, he runs well. I was just trying to watch how he runs around the field a little bit. He's pretty effortless. You know, movement around the football field, but you can generally tell who the freshmen are. They're not quite as filled out as some of the other guys, but he's at 6'6". What do you weigh in at?
You know,
245. I mean, that's a good number starting. We really didn't get a chance to see.
He was on field too,
except when they were doing punts. So we didn't get,
I will say, I really didn't need to see Ian Premer do anything. I just know he's good. I just need to see him walking around. He's going to be a very good college football player.
The way they talk about him suggests that. And I want to circle back to wide receiver, because I asked Mike Dembrock about Cam Williams. I watched Cam Williams closely. And the only reason we could watch Cam Williams closely was he was actually in the rotation. He was part of the eight. They definitely used him a lot. He was a field receiver, not a boundary. He was at field 90% of the time.
Yep.
He was also alternating with Matt Jeffrey, who had the best day of all the receivers. Jeffrey's just going to be a player for Notre Dame. I mean, I'm not saying he's pulling a Jordan Faison or a Chris Fink senior year, but he might be pulling a Chris Fink, whatever that was, redshirt sophomore year, where he's involved in these things. The diving catch of the sideline where all the coaches are just screaming, great catch, Jeff. And he also had the diving one out of bounds.
Right.
It's like, well, he was out of bounds. I go, yeah, okay, great. Did you see the catch? I mean, it was a remark. He made great plays. And Cam Williams made some good plays today. He also had the only drop I saw. He juggled a slant, which I think is important because he's super fast. He had 2 yards on the guy, but when he juggled a slant, he then had a guy behind him ready to tackle him if it was tackle. And I asked Mike Dembrock, I couldn't even get the word out before he said, it's consistency. It's been a 3-year battle of consistency. We are doing everything we can for him. He actually said it that way. We're doing everything we can for him. But he is in the rotation right now. I don't expect him to go to field number two. I don't either.
And Dembrock pointed out that there will be a rotation because we didn't see Devin Fitzgerald today on the varsity field, as you put it, Tim. And you're probably right. I think Cam Williams will get a good long look before.
I'm not saying he'll never go to the second.
Right. Before they would make determination. But this is, you know, when the first word is always consistency. I mean, we saw an example of it today. The ball that Telich really kind of took away from him, that's a ball that your wide receiver has to catch, and Telich kind of ripped it out of his arms and you know, was going the other way with it. It's just like I feel like sometimes there was a thread about us not giving Cam
Williams
enough.
Well, that's why I wanted
to
ask about Denbrock so we could find out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not we're not making it up. We're not making the determination. This is 2 years of coaches not bringing the guy up, and then when they do, it's always a matter of consistency, and we saw it today. But there's no doubt, made a move in the spring, and even made a move today in ways that we haven't seen in the previous 2 years.
Yeah, he made some nice contested catches too. It's almost like sometimes he seems like he has the yips a little bit, because you mentioned that slant. He also had one in 7-on-7 where he's wide open and just dropped it too. So yeah, the one you're referencing. So he can make some of those tough plays, but I don't know if he starts overthinking it when he gets open, and he's so fast that he does get pretty open sometimes.
I didn't see what he weighed in at, but I mean, he's put together now pretty well too. His upper body development, he's over 200 pounds. So that's, you know, that's good. He's moving in the right direction, and he does have a ton of eligibility left.
Pete, any offensive line observations on a day where they're not allowed to cut block or block for real?
No,
I
think
you had a little bit though with Brew and Mukamuka, which we'll get to.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're on a day like today, we're kind of reaching to come up with line observations in either way. Like, you know, Gerby Lambert is a large human being. That's not new, it's still quite notable.
Yes.
Like the right side, the right end of the offensive line is, I think, going to be a lot stronger and forceful than it was last year. You know, I'd be lying if I said like I saw Will Black do anything amazing, but I didn't see him get like whipped by Bryce Young either. I think from an offensive line point of view, the most notable thing is Ashton Craig was out there and he actually took some team reps. Beyond that, I'm not sure I could give you a whole lot of that position.
Yeah, I think that's Denbrock. Excuse me, Drew, but didn't Denbrock comment about just the importance of having Ashton Craig out there and what a difference it makes to have him out there? And yes, he did get some snaps at guard. I didn't see those, Tim. Did you see those?
No,
or Drew?
Told me the same thing.
I did. Yeah. I only saw them in individual periods, but there are times where there was just like a guard working alongside the center, and they had him doing both roles in that. And then Denbrock, in that comment you referenced, said we need him on the field, whether that's at guard or center.
Right.
And so he was only at center during non-contact periods with the team too. During contact periods, Otting was always out there still, but he was there with the first lineups when they tried it out, and then Otting would be with the second in those non-contact periods.
And
Drew, you saw Cam Heron at guard and center, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I did too. And when they were giving Chris Tarek snaps at center, that's a big, strong dude. That might be his best, if he's going to play, that's probably his best position. You know, Heron looks, he's just not, he doesn't have the stature of his fellow offensive linemen. And so it looks a little strange with him at guard, but they did flip flop from where we saw them most of the time in the spring.
Yeah, when Otting dropped to the second team, they would move Matty Augustine back to right tackle, and then Owen Strebeck, who I think is the one I saw get beat most consistently on those first two units, he would come off the field in that instance.
Before I switch to defense for segment two, there's one guy we haven't talked to that's talk of the message boards. I was standing in the end zone right there during dynamic stretching, and I could not remember who that extremely tall, athletic-looking number zero guy was wearing blue, because I hadn't seen him play for Notre Dame before, and it wasn't Malachi Fields. And lo and behold, hey, he came over from Ohio State. His name is Quincy Porter. Quincy Porter, your impressions, guys. I saw one writer say that he was moving well. I will just say I did not think he was moving well.
I'm with you.
I think there were some snaps where it looked like, oh, okay, but he looks pretty good, but lateral movement was not there. He's got the long sleeve on the left leg, and anytime he had to do any type of cutting or shifting, he's not ready yet. But again, good to see him out there doing something. He must be fairly close, but I thought there were reps where he didn't look really close.
Yeah,
it's a body type they need so badly. I mean, I think he's listed or maybe only an inch taller than Micah Gilbert.
That's
or maybe
not true. Yep.
But I mean, you watch him and like, oh, he looked like Quincy Porter is listed at 6'4", but looks like he's 6'6".
Yeah.
They don't have a body type like them out there. So do they need him against Wisconsin? Probably not. In November or December or January, they're going to need Quincy Porter.
Yeah, Dem Brock noted that as well, and he said he's the closest he's been to being on the field, which, again, when he's not taking any team reps and stuff, that's not saying a whole ton. But I agree, he looked, I mean, he has very long strides, but if he, as you guys mentioned, if he cut, he looked awkward, and he didn't look the most comfortable catching the ball, even on air, but it's been a while. I'm not reading too much into that, but he still clearly has a little bit of ways to go.
We'll be back with segment two, discussing the defense. We are back with segment two, discussing the defense from today's opening practice of training camp 2026. And there's been a theme on our message board ever since a Colorado judge deemed that class of 2022 players who did not register could potentially come back and play their fifth year in accordance with the recently passed or planned to be passed 5-for-5 plan. The only guy that would be involved really in that discussion for Notre Dame is junior Tui Halamaka. And Tim Priester, you wanted to discuss that a little bit before we get to what we saw on the field today. He is not on the roster for anyone wondering when we got the new roster handed out today.
Yeah, and this, you know, I mean, this is, they're in limbo with him because, you know, we've learned that there is some concern about what would happen eligibility-wise where another ruling, you know, from the judge would make a player ineligible after he played. So for right now, that's on hold. He would be the only opportunity that Notre Dame would have to bring back a fifth-year player. That may be something that we'll address here in the coming days, but right now he's not a part of the preseason preparation.
Part of today, and Pete Sampson, I was a little surprised by this, I'm sure you were too, was with the first unit, Armel Malukum with the first unit very consistently, actually, alongside Francis Brew. And when you're alongside Francis Brew and flanked by Bryce Young and Boubacar Traore, I can say that is the first unit.
That was surprising to me because I just assumed it would be Onye and Brew, or maybe it'd be Gray and Brew or Gray and Onye, but not not Malukum. I mean, honestly,
that's good.
So, I mean, we'll see how this plays out over time. Again, it's, I don't want to read too much in line play on day one with no pads, but, you know, he's there for a reason. So you got to give him credit for that. And look, if he, at the end, if he's the fourth defensive tackle, great. That it really, it doesn't need to be much more than that. But like, honestly, like from a body type point of view, I thought Teon Gray looked a lot better than he did in spring ball. I think he's listed down 10 pounds to what, 6'6", 325. But it should be a good group of defensive tackles. Malukum is definitely like, I'll believe it when I see it, but the coaches seem to kind of believe it.
Well, you know, when they brought Charlie Partridge in, he was one of the people that tried to get Malukum to, Malukum was going to enter the portal. And he was, you know, one of the lead guys to try to get him to stay. Maybe he saw something. Maybe Charlie Partridge has taught Armel Malukum a better way of playing defensive tackle.
That's how much he got.
He was actually in the portal and then took his name out. You know, I mean, they may have found something here. And anytime you have a coaching change, and when that coaching change is a guy that's as much success as Charlie Partridge has, maybe he's tapped into something here. It'd be a great development for Notre Dame's interior defensive line this year.
Yeah, and I was watching offense, but I did note Malukum once because I think it was another outside zone run with James, and Malukum's the one who kind of ran towards the sideline and kind of met him as he kind of tried to cut through the hole and engulfed him very quickly. And so he moves pretty well for his size.
You know, there's two things that occurred to me. Maybe I thought he and Brew played violently together. Maybe they play violently together and they like the tandem of Onye and Gray and Brew. And I am speculating here. This is not information I have of Malukum. Also, I don't know if this means anything at all, but Jason Onye joined practice maybe a half tick late. He came running into the huddle, not the stretching that I saw. So maybe he was getting random treatment or doing something that made him be rotate with the twos today. Like, you never know. It could be. And tomorrow it could be Jason Onye rotating with the ones and Malukum rotating with the twos. Or maybe Elijah Hughes' day is to be with the twos. Like, I didn't see.
Yeah, we didn't see much of Hughes.
Yeah. He was not in as much as the other guys were. He definitely came in. I have it in my practice report with the, at one point we saw the third unit. Davian Dixon was also, actually, he was rotated with the second unit when this was not live stuff. So, yeah, you never know what the rotation is in certain situations. Remember, Hughes started playing actual good college football last year, near the middle of the year, end of the year. So I do believe he will remain in the rotation.
Yeah, Pete, I agree with you. I thought Teon Gray looked really great. Spent some time with the down near the defensive lineman for a while there. And, you know, we kicked Bryce Young, the whole notion of size and weight with Bryce Young back and forth.
He looks good.
Yeah. I thought he looked, he really, you know, there was some concern. I think somebody had said about, well, is he going to be, you know, too big for defense end and more of a defensive tackle? No, he is fine tuned his body to the point where he's a defensive end. Talk about a guy that needs, I mean, 5 for 5 is tailor made for Bryce Young, unless he really, really advances here the next 2 years. But I don't think it shouldn't have been that surprising to us that he played a ton his first 2 years, but he wasn't always consistent. Well, he really didn't come into the game of football until a little bit later, and he's just learning now. But I thought the body types along there look good. Sevilano's down to 313, although I think that he still looked a little bit more than that. Logan Thomas, the lower body doesn't match that of a defensive end. But he is up to 221. I may be looking at a different roster than what you guys are, heights and weights. But
you should have the printed one as the current one.
Okay. 221.
Also, Bubakar Traore looks like $1 million.
Oh, man.
First-round draft pick look to him. Like, he just walking down the stage after becoming a first-round draft pick. I mean,
I would advise everyone to look at the Team 138 photo that Notre Dame posted online. You can tell that he is absurdly athletic sitting down in the bleachers.
That's what people say about us. We looked absurdly
athletic. Oh, yeah. That's what Landau, that's how he described me when I worked out with him.
Well, we were safe in the bleachers though this time, Pete. That's all that matters. We were much safer than usual, not encumbered by laptops. So that was a big deal.
And Francis Brew is a
Thank you. Yes, Tim Priester, thank you. Because I called Chris Watt a bowling ball with knees 13 years ago. Francis Brew is a wrecking ball being swung from something with knees who's violently screaming at people. He is a monster in there. That is a huge pickup. He's a violent guy. I mean, it's great. I say that with great admiration. He's a violent guy.
You know, maybe they want, like, it in putting, maybe they're just kind of mixing and matching size with their interior defensive line. Onye with Gray. And, you know, then I don't know exactly what happened with the defensive tackles today and the
but Mukum was the with
rotation.
The There's no, other
no Mukum was definitely with the ones, but it could have had something to do with Onye arriving late. But any way you look at it, Mukum being in the mix is a good thing for Notre Dame's defensive tackle situation.
As we led into today's podcast, it's also a good thing that KVA, Kingston Villamalasa, is not wearing a knee brace. Pete, we detailed him rotating in where he's able to rotate in. It was also interesting to see that you could tell when they're going 7-on-7, and it's a little bit more situational probably, that there's no doubt Jaden Osbury is the other guy that is very good in coverage among Notre Dame linebackers, because he had one play where he was running with Bubba Frazier on a bit of a corner route, a little bit downfield, and I think his kind of brief foray at nickel a couple years ago has probably helped him understand space and spatial recognition downfield, because Osbury can play some pass defense too.
A really good group of linebackers.
Yeah.
You know, Drake Bowen's going to be a captain. Is he the best linebacker that they have? I'm not sure that's true. Yeah, and like even Snead, I think, Priester, you asked Chris Ash about this after practice. It's like, what's his role? And Ash is just like, look, hopefully he can be a situational rotational guy for us. Like he was situational. Hopefully he can be rotational. Like,
yes, that's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Snead would probably start at most places. At Notre Dame, he is the fourth linebacker.
Ash was
awesome.
Ash was complimentary of him too. Yeah. Ash was
complimentary. That's great.
Yep.
So yeah, it's a really talented group. It's a great room.
Yeah, and you noted that play where Osbury is running with Bubba Frazier after practice when talking to Mike Dunbrock. He talked about Bubba Frazier like he was the fastest guy in the offense, too. So he's like, if we need to get him on the field now with a 5 for 5 in very niche roles, like we have a lot of fast guys, but that's different. So the fact that Osbury could cover him even to a degree, I know he's a freshman and he still has a lot to learn, but I think Osbury has always excelled in that arena. And now if you pair him with a guy like KVA and stuff like that too, you have two exceptional guys. And Bowen also improved hugely in that regard last year too.
We ended the last segment talking about number 0, Quincy Porter, what he looked like in pads standing there. I looked over at the defense to start the practice as well. And I noticed they had a bunch of those guys that looked like Quincy Porter standing there. That's really interesting for the secondary. And number one would be Leonard Moore, who looks a lot like Tay Johnson, who looks a lot like Dallas Golden, only he's a little shorter, but his arms are just as long as everybody else. And Pete Sampson, you mentioned to me when we were 80 yards away, Christian Gray looks better this year than he did last year physically.
Yeah, I thought this would probably be the best secondary that I've covered. Probably going to be the best secondary that I covered after day one. I'll be interested to sort of see what happens with McKinney and Sanders at the field corner position. I kind of had penciled McKinney in, but I get it. It's day one. He just got here in the summer. Sanders has been here. But shoot, I mean, more. I feel bad for Micah Gilbert. Like, it's got to be so miserable to go to practice. And then, that was Gerard's first pass in one-on-ones was Micah Gilbert matched up with Leonard Moore. Guess what? It was incomplete. I don't know. It's a great, great secondary. As long as they just get good play from McKinney / Sanders, it will be a great, great secondary.
Yeah, I loved the little bit that Sanders had the opportunity to start at Michigan. I thought he was really, really good. I loved his film coming into Notre Dame. I don't know that we necessarily saw as much of that in the spring.
In the blue goal game, he was the standout.
Yeah, no, he had a really good blue goal game earlier in the spring. I don't know that we saw as much of that. And he's played some nickel too, so that tells you about him. McKinney made a play. So McKinney came out with the twos today, and he made a play on the first snap. So that was really good to see. But Pete, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a tandem there. I think Jaden Sanders, I think he's going to play a significant role this year. McKinney will too. McKinney's long, man. I mean, he's got, I don't know if you, he has like sleeves that come up, you know, from his wrist to above his elbow, white sleeves. And so I think that kind of makes him look even longer than he is. But, you know, kind of in the mold of these recent Notre Dame cornerbacks that are 6'1", but when you stand on the field and watch them play, you'd swear they're longer than that. And I think the McKinney's in that range as well.
I want to make sure we talk about the safeties briefly after this, but sticking with the corners for 1 second, the Sanders McKinney thing is going to be great to follow. But Tim Priester, you asked a question to Chris Ash, will Christian Gray get work back at the field? And his immediate answer was Christian Gray needs to and absolutely wants to master the nickel position.
Yeah, he says he knows what he can do, and he knows what he can do at that position as well. But they want him to master nickel. And, you know, I mean, we can talk about it, which we have been for how many months now since we heard about it? I think in January. Yeah. But only in practice situations isn't going to answer it. Only in game situations when you're matched up against a really, really speedy guy off the line of scrimmage in the slot will we know. But I think, again, Gray's one of those guys that has deceptive length. You see him listed at 6 foot or 6 foot one, but he's got that nice long reach, and that's, you know, quick openers to the guy in the slot. That's what nickels have to defend.
I just want to note. Oh, I was just a little bit at first.
You were with Ash during the Dallas Golden conversation at all.
I wasn't.
Okay. I'm sorry. What were we going to note?
Oh, just on Jaden Sanders. I like him too. I do wonder if he maybe has a little bit of propensity to get beat deep. I know that was, he got beat by Micah Gilbert in the blue goal game. And then today, I think one of the first reps in 7-on-7 or team, I forget which one, Jordan Faison kind of torched him. And it was just a poorly thrown ball by Carr. But I've seen him get beat a little bit too much. And then that, I mean, he's still only a sophomore and that he can definitely improve. But I think that's one area that I would be slightly concerned about with him.
And actually, DJ, as much as I like Jaden Sanders as well, DJ McKinney had really good coverage on Matt Jeffrey when Jeffrey made that diving catch. That was a catch, not a coverage mistake. Hell of a catch.
That was in front of us. And when the ball was thrown, I didn't think he was going to get to it.
Yeah. And McKinney, too, to note, he didn't play football this spring. He was at Colorado finishing his degree. So he's going to have a little bit of catching up to do.
Quick note on Dallas Golden, just because I want to slip that in to Ash, and we'll follow up, of course, when we get Aaron Henry. But he kind of admitted, yeah, he's getting back into it. He missed a lot of spring. He's not where he was when he left off during the season. He was really complimentary of Golden, but he takes some time to get back from injury.
He indicated he missed a bunch of summer.
That's what I was going to say. Right, right.
Which, that adds up. But boy, he looks the part too, Dallas Golden.
Man, he looks he's looked the part since the first time we saw him in Notre Dame uniform. There's no doubt. Again, that subtle length that cannot be accurately depicted based upon height.
Pete Sampson also looking the part was Joey O'Brien, who did rotate in with the twos. It started out as Talich and Long, but Joey O'Brien got plenty of time with Talich as it went along.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he's willowy.
Yeah, that's a great word for it.
So, I think there's a lot of Lauren Landau time ahead for Joey O'Brien over years, not just, one season. But, I mean, you didn't bring him in here to sit. Right. So there's got to be a role for him somewhere.
I mean, they have the type of defense now where Joey O'Brien's the luxury item, where all of a sudden you're in week six and you're like, man, he's really making some plays on defense in practice. Maybe we could work him in the dime package. And it's not like it used to be. We're like, we're going to have to start Sean Crawford at safety because we have nobody else that can humanly man the position. Those days are gone. And that team went to the playoff, Tim.
It's strikingly unusual when you see Joey O'Brien lining up at safety because he's so long. We were standing when they were going through dynamic stretch, just seeing him warm up. It's like, how can that dude be a safety? I mean, I don't think his height limits what he can do back there. It's just unusual to see someone that long. He's a tremendous athlete. I would say I saw a little bit of progress on his frame with Laren Lando over the summer, but Pete, you're right. It's a long body to fill out, and he needs a lot of filling out.
Your segment two is longer than segment one, so I just want to go back to you before we wrap up. Any notes you want to throw out from the offense for people? Because, it was only saw Hebert and Carr, but maybe early in practice saw the other quarterbacks, and you got to see some of the players that moved to the two-spot field as well.
Yeah, I mean, I also want to note, too, I did note this in my practice report, but with Charles Jagasaw, I got to look at him a little bit. I think something that stood out to me is that even once he's back fully healthy, there's going to be a little bit of just getting back into football shape that's going to be required. He's had two back-to-back upper body injuries that have just made things difficult. So I think just seeing him walk around, that sort of thing was kind of apparent. But I agree on the notes on Ian Premer. Like, you see him in stretch lines. He looks, you believe he's 245, and you also believe he has more size he could add on to his frame too. So I think just that stood out. Mylon Graham, I also thought, like, oh, that's the other Ohio State wide receiver. Like, I think you noted that too, O'Malley. Like, he looks pretty cut up for a guy who's 195, and he also has long arms. He's 6'1". Like, I think some of those things stand out. Kaden Finley, I can't believe he's only listed at 6'1", because he looks several inches taller than I do. And you mentioned, I think, too, O'Malley, that Dylan Faison is a legit 6'2".
Yes.
Which I was surprised by.
I was shocked someone was on the board. Like, there's no way that guy's 6'2". I saw him today standing next to wide receivers who are 6 feet and 6'1". He was way taller. He's much taller than Jordan. I was stunned by that. I don't know if they did they ever lie short on recruiting things? It doesn't seem like that. I don't know why they would. They were hiding him from everybody else. So, no, Dylan Faison, legit 6'2". That's where we'll leave off, because tomorrow we're going to have a brief practice viewing, and Saturday we'll have a brief practice viewing, which means we'll have a full podcast on Monday, August 10th. Until then, for Tim Priester and Drew Mentok of Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson of The Athletic, thanks for joining us, Pete. I'm Tim O'Malley, and this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.